It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Hey, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about special needs trust. We started talking about that last week, and we're going to wrap that up today. Of course, special needs trust, supplemental needs trust, really all the same type vehicle.
Right.
And as we've mentioned multiple times on the program before, you know, when you're looking at using a trust as part of your plan, your estate plan, there's always a reason why. I mean, you don't just throw things. Assets in a trust and say, well, I feel better, I'm in a trust.
I'll figure out what to do with it later.
Right. That's dangerous to do that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, sometimes it's important to use a trust for estate tax purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's important to use a certain type of trust for protecting assets, maybe from a long-term health care expenditure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes there may be the necessity to put assets in a trust because of some limited liability issues that you want to establish. But a supplemental needs trust or a special needs trust is really the reason we use that type of document is usually for someone who has a disability in most cases and may be eligible for some type of government benefits, SSI, Medicaid, you know, some type of benefits, subsidized housing, so that, you know, we can leave assets for the benefit of that loved one. But what we'd leave to that loved one is, number one, not under the exclusive control of that loved one who may be susceptible to influence from others, first. And then secondly, and probably just as importantly, a properly drafted supplemental and special needs trust would also allow those assets to be available for this person, but not be used against that person for qualification purposes, like for a means-tested type program.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a very powerful vehicle that the law provides to us.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, having a disabled child or a disabled loved one is a huge responsibility. And I think that not only the lifetime responsibility while we're living and taking care of that person and making sure that person is having a fulfilled life.
Mm-hmm.
I think equally as important to that is to plan for what happens when the parent or the whoever the caregiver is, the loved one is no longer with us anymore.
Right, right.
And how do we do that?
Yeah.
Well, I think the biggest ticket item on that right off the top is get your estate plan in order.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can have a proper special needs trust, supplemental needs trust, there for that loved one, that child who has a disability, or adult. You know, it could be either.
Right. Okay.
Ben, these documents usually frame up in a couple of different ways. One very common structure is that there is an independent, a freestanding supplemental trust between, you know, a grantor, the established person of the trust, who establishes the trust, the creator, if you will, their trustee, and for the benefit of course, the person with special needs.
Right. When you say freestanding, is that different from other?
Just its own, yes, it is different. That's what I'm about to explain. It just is its own document, if you will, that is independent of any other documentation.
Okay.
Then, of course, a will then pour over to this special, as again, independent, freestanding trust.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the will would say, I hereby put one-third of my estate in that trust document by and between so-and-so a given date. Okay,
right.
This is a pretty common scenario, as opposed to what you were asking, Ben, that the trust be within the will, or that parents come forward and establish a will and say, well, a third to this child and a third to this child, and then my last third to my third child who has special needs is in a trust within the will.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between the two is that if it is an independent trust, then other people can add to the principle of the trust.
Right.
Grandparents, brothers, sisters, of course, parents many times. A life insurance policy can be named as the beneficiary of the life insurance policy, mm-hmm. could be the trust.
Right.
Okay. So I would say that most of the time we see these supplemental needs trust as, if you will, as kind of their own independent trust, not contained within another document.
Mm-hmm.
I had this recently where the grandparents came in and they have a grandchild with special needs, and they proceeded to tell me that their children, their daughter, mm-hmm. had already prepared in the state of Connecticut a supplemental needs trust for the grandchild. So it made it very easy for me as the lawyer preparing the grandparents' will to put her share simply in the already existing supplemental needs trust that was up in Connecticut. I just needed a copy of that. The trust then, of course, would dictate what the name of that trust happens to be, and I would then pour over the percentage that those grandparents wanted into that trust by using the name of that document.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
So, again, these are trusts set up, and often the scenario may be you have a special needs child.
Correct.
And as they grow into adulthood, they want to have some provision for them.
Exactly.
Now, could that also be could that apply to another, to a spouse even, or could it? I mean, are there other scenarios?
Any loved one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, what we're looking at is someone who is receiving or may possibly receive some type of benefit that would be means tested,
mm-hmm.
and the most likely benefit would be a SSI type benefit, a Medicaid type benefit that is currently and probably will always be means tested. So, I mean, that certainly could be for a child.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, you know, even for a niece or a nephew or a brother or a sister.
Right.
Or it could be anyone that you really have the desire to provide for anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be you have a heightened desire to provide for a certain loved one because of their special needs, and because of the circumstances, and because of, you know, maybe their actual loved one, their parent is not, you know, maybe they have their own health issues,
mm-hmm.
and you just recognize this person in your family. Yeah, I think that I want to leave 10% of my estate, 20% of my estate into this SNT for this niece, this nephew.
Right.
I mean, it could be a spouse even.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you certainly could do that.
A very important issue also, Ben, in this type of trust, and
mm-hmm.
as Wes introduced the program this morning, we talked about, you know, the different kinds of trust, always looking at what the purpose of the trust is.
Right.
You know, it's always interesting when clients call on the phone and say, you know, Mr. Harvell, I need a trust.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a trust for what? What is the purpose of the trust? What are the objectives? This is true with kind of all trusts, but it is particularly true with a supplemental needs trust that the contingency provisions are really critical.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about what some of those contingency provisions would be right after the break.
We'll take this break. We'll come back and look at that as well, to the contingency provisions. But also, if you have any questions or you would like to call in, you can do so now.
You can call me at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
All right, and we'll have more to come with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, on Let's Talk Legal in just a moment. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, and with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins.
Ben, because of the nature of these trusts being for the lifetime of the person with special needs, we as the lawyer really do need to anticipate what some of the contingencies might be. Now, one contingency, of course, is that we need a trustee. We
mm-hmm.
know that.
Sure.
But we sure as heck need an alternate.
Right.
And probably a second alternate, possibly even a third alternate, mm-hmm. because this trust is going to be in existence for a long time. Lastly, there are provisions that we can use in a trust document that that are, if you will, upon the death of the finally named trustee, if that were to happen, mm-hmm. there is then a formula that applies that would then appoint a successor trustee. Okay.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Okay,
so those are things that need to be thought about in terms of, you know, a trustee and certainly a contingent trustee, possibly even a second contingent, because again, mm-hmm. the trust is we're anticipating that this is going to be for the lifetime of the handicapped person. Now, the other issue is what happens when our person with special needs dies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have these assets in the trust. We have a life insurance policy that paid over. We have assets from grandmama, granddaddy, mm-hmm. mother, dad, and now all of a sudden, you know, due to their illness, they die. What mm-hmm. happens to the assets within this trust? And again, this could be many years out.
Right.
See, this could be, you know, we could be talking about 25 years from now. Where do these assets go? So, again, it's very important that we analyze carefully who the contingent beneficiaries are,
mm-hmm.
and have the proper language to really dictate where those assets go, even though it may be a long time from now.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. I mean, I know, you know, no 21-year-old severely autistic, who could live another 60 years.
Absolutely.
Yeah? Or longer.
So what happens 60 years from now?
Right.
Okay, and so there are some challenges here
mm-hmm.
In terms of these questions being asked, the right questions being asked by a good lawyer, and then getting some answers, and then putting that in language that's clear and concise and non-controversial.
You mentioned about the trustee. Can an institution be named as a trustee?
Yes, certainly can be. And yeah, back to the trustee issue, it's mm-hmm. very important, obviously, to give that a lot of thought. I mm-hmm. mean, as Cecil says, you know, you need to go, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 deep, maybe, just because the life of such a type trust. And, you know, as with any trustee, I mean, you really want to make sure this is someone who's going to do right by the special needs person, mm-hmm. by the beneficiary of the trust, because they're going to be the fiduciary. They're the person who's responsible for managing those assets and taking care of the beneficiary. That person is going to make investment decisions. It's, you know, going to decide, are we going to use some of these funds that we have in the supplemental needs trust to buy a condominium for this person, or to buy a home for this person,
mm-hmm.
or to buy, you know, or are we just going to rent property?
Right.
What's the living arrangement going to be? How are we going to invest the other assets? So, you know, you really need to think about who the best person is going to be, you know, to make those decisions consistent with what you as the grantor think would be, you know, appropriate for the beneficiary.
And this is outside of any benefits that the beneficiary may receive.
Yeah,
right?
And that's kind of why it's called a supplemental needs trust, because mm-hmm. it supplements what other benefits may be received.
Mm-hmm.
But it can't be used to offset those benefits or to disqualify the beneficiary for those benefits.
Right, they may qualify then to receive health care benefits.
Absolutely.
Right. But then living arrangements, food, and all those other things may be not included.
That's right. All the essentials of life. Mm-hmm. I mean, the goal here is, you know, to create quality of life for this person who already, you know, has some struggles,
mm-hmm.
has some life struggles. We all have life struggles, but special needs.
Sure.
Because, you know, the way this works is if there's a failure to plan in this regard, and this person may be receiving SSI during the lifetime of the grantor, but this grantor, maybe the parent,
mm-hmm.
doesn't set up the trust, and then the parent passes away, and then this beneficiary, the special needs child, then receives an inheritance. Well, the SSI stops. You know, the means-tested programs that this person is available to receive
mm-hmm.
and is eligible for, they all stop until all of those assets, or most of those assets, are spent down,
right.
depleted, gone, And then we don't have anything else left to take care of that child. Mm-hmm. Only thing we have is whatever the government will provide. Mm. Well, that's not the kind of scenario that we want to set up. But in the event there's a failure to plan, failure to put a special needs trust in place, then that's the way the law currently works with regard to that. And that would happen mm-hmm. because the benefits would stop. But in the event the trust is in place, then what do we have?
Right.
We have, obviously, assets there to supplement whatever the government will cover for this special needs person.
Now, are you seeing this also apply and used occasionally by, a lot of parents that have watched their children go off to war mm-hmm. and come back and injured and
yes.
Disabled now? Uh-huh. Is that a situation where that can be used?
In certain circumstances, I mean, if the facts are fitting, if that mm-hmm. person is receiving government...
They would get veterans benefits, yeah.
Right, but that might be different than disability,
mm-hmm.
the kind of disability SSI that we're kind of referring to in these files.
Right.
So we would have to analyze that and see.
Okay.
In other words, they could potentially, a veteran could potentially still inherit from his mother or father or grandfather, and it not necessarily
mm-hmm.
Affect him continuing or she continuing to receive her veteran benefits.
Okay.
And that would be the question that we would need to look into.
Right.
Now, one thing that we mentioned during the break, Wes and myself, is that let's keep in mind, we're going to kind of shake it up here a little bit, this trust can own real property.
Mm-hmm.
It could own the home.
Yeah, you mentioned a condo. Yeah, right.
You know, a condominium, any kind of asset. It's
mm-hmm.
not as if it just has to be liquid money, if you will, in the bank or in the stock market or something of that nature. It can own...
Not just providing toothbrushes. And
it can,
like,
right, it can right, own right. A great variety of different types of mm-hmm. assets, as can many trusts, by the way.
Right.
Okay.
And then under that scenario, of course, if the trustee is holding mm-hmm. real property, the home place maybe for the child to live in, then hopefully there's also some liquid asset in the trust as well, because the trustee then would use the liquid asset in the trust to cover the taxes, the insurance,
mm-hmm.
the homeowner's dues, maintenance, those type things. So obviously when we own real property, we know it's not
yes,
free
right.
to maintain
yes,
it and
free.
Own it. You
yeah,
know,
right.
It's nice to have it, but it costs money to mm-hmm. keep it.
You know, Ben, we keep dancing around really general trust law in this conversation that
mm-hmm.
we're having about supplemental needs trust. And what I mean by that is that, you know, we just yesterday has a wonderful lady in from Beaufort, and she said, you know, Mr. Harvell, what is a trust?
Mm-hmm.
What is a trust? You know, the word trust, people think, they do think, you know, in a bank,
you know,
Chase Manhattan, you know, I mean,
right.
Let's think of the biggest bank we can think of, and let's think of the most money that we can think of, you know,
mm-hmm.
Millions and millions of dollars, you know, with a big, huge bank.
And they have a trust department.
And they have a trust department. And this is what many times people assume or think that a trust is. And that is a trust, by the way. But a trust can be very, very simple in nature, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It can be private between family members. Then that's the way this kind of trust usually would be. Most of the scenarios that Wes and I see are where moms or dads or grandmother, granddads set up a supplemental needs trust, and one of the siblings, if you will,
mm-hmm.
is the trustee of the trust. You know, that good old brother or sister that knows and has known for their entire life that their brother or sister was born with, you know, with an illness.
Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. If you'd like to call in with a question, you may.
You can call me at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
Talking about supplemental needs trusts, again, how they relate to other trusts as well. And, again, this is, an opportunity that maybe a lot of people don't realize because we have probably in our extended families, almost everyone has someone.
Right.
That is facing these challenges.
Well, you know, sometimes if you have a special needs child and you're the parent taking care of this child, it's not necessary to have this person adjudicated incompetent and
mm-hmm.
have a guardian appointed because, you know, you all get along. Right. And everything's working out fine.
Mm-hmm.
But in the event that you set up a supplemental needs trust in the event of your death, then you probably are not going to have to go through that guardianship either as it relates to the estate of that you left to this person, because the trustee is going to control the assets you leave for the person.
Mm-hmm.
But if you leave those assets just to this individual special needs person, and they may not have the ability to manage those assets, or they may be susceptible to influence from other people,
sure.
You may be forced into a guardianship,
mm-hmm.
Which is a formal proceeding. We file in the court. We have to serve all the interested parties, the family members. Sometimes it's contested. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's adversarial. So that is a whole process and whole procedure that potentially you're framing up for your family to have to go through if you don't have this trust in place. The trust really solves more issues, many more issues than what we've spoken about on the program. The primary purpose is to hold the asset for the beneficiary and to not disqualify this person for benefits. That's
mm-hmm.
the primary purpose. But there's a lot more to it than that. I mean, protect this person from people who might try to take advantage of them. That's another one. Create a vehicle so that the vehicle is there where you have an individual you trust to take care of those assets for the beneficiary
mm-hmm.
during their lifetimes. Avoid the possibility of having to get into a guardianship proceeding. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on and on. So the law does provide this very, in my opinion, perfect vehicle to address this issue. It's just that sometimes folks don't get around to putting that in place because everything's going just fine
right.
while the parent's living.
Yeah.
And they don't think about, necessarily how things are going to go otherwise. Or they decide to leave the asset to maybe the brother of the special needs
mm-hmm.
child. But then that asset is subject to the twists and turns of the brother's life.
Exactly. Yeah,
those assets would not be used to disqualify the beneficiary, the special needs child.
Instead of naming that brother as the trustee.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and then the brother goes through a divorce. Oh, my goodness, we lose half of it.
Mm-hmm.
The brother's in a car accident that he causes, well, subject to a judgment against him. So that's dangerous to leave assets that are there to take care of a special needs child for the rest of their life to another child and subject them to the twists and turns of that child's life.
I would imagine a lot of people don't feel like they need to start planning until they know that this person's on the verge of turning 18, for example, when they reach an age where they are allowed to make certain decisions on their own.
Right.
So, but the planning, again, is done probably as soon as you know that the special need exists, right?
Absolutely. Because, the assets that would disqualify this child are mm-hmm. in the name of the parents.
Right.
So they don't disqualify the child
mm-hmm.
until the parent passes away. And we never know when we're going
right.
to pass away.
That's
so
right.
There you go.
One of the most common trusts that we do is trust for parents who just have minor children.
Mm-hmm.
Then,
right.
obviously,
yeah.
That's kind of the irony of it is that we're doing a lot of those.
If you want to find out more, you can call on the folks at Harvell & Collins online at harvellandcollins.com and at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.